Call the meeting to order for the Task Force on Cadmium in Children's Jewelry. And I want to welcome everybody to the meeting who is sitting as a member of our task force and to the public who might be viewing this both within the room and on television. We appreciate your interest in this, and we hope that this task force will be successful in moving forward and trying to gather information that will help us in coming to some conclusions and also in giving some guidance to our legislature, both in the Senate and the House, on addressing this particular issue. I'm excited by the fact that we have some very dedicated people who have been involved in this issue before, including my co-chair, Representative Diana Urban. And we also have a great number of people who have expertise bringing perspectives from really all sides of this issue. So I think that having that kind of a dedicated and experienced task force will benefit the state and the legislature very well. And I personally am looking forward to working with everybody in discussing this matter. And some of you I know, some of you I don't know, but I'm hoping by the time that we conclude our meetings, we will feel like a family. And notwithstanding the fact that we may have disagreements from time to time and different perspectives, again, we share the common goal of trying to do what's best for our children and for our state, and to make sure that we study the issue sufficiently so that when we come to conclusions, we do so intelligently and with adequate information. So with that, I would ask my co-chair if she would like to make her remarks.
Thank you, and I am looking forward to getting this task force going. And we are going to use something that we have used in the Committee on Children, and it's called Questions for the Record. And this has become a device that has been very successful for us. So if someone is presenting to us in an informational hearing and they say something like 57 children that were exposed to organophosphates had autism, at that point or at the end of their testimony, we would ask that they provide us with the data that indicates that is in fact something that has been investigated and has been reported in a journal or a study that is reputable. And if there is an anecdotal issue, somebody walked out the door and dropped dead because their next door neighbor used some pesticide, we would then again ask, you know, can you verify that in fact happened? So if that happens, we will, at either the end of the testimony, or I have to admit, with my Senate co-chair on children, she wanted to jump right in when there was a data point that she wanted some clarification on. So I think that Representative Barham and I have agreed that we would wait till the end of the testimony, and if there is a data issue that has been presented and we feel that we want it verified, because after all, this is public record and this is information that will impact the children of the state of Connecticut, we will ask a question for the record. For those of you who have been doing federal issues, it is a technique that is used in the federal government. However, it's been my experience they don't actually follow through. However, on the Children's Committee, we've been enormously successful, and I have to thank my committee clerk, Liz Giannaris, and Bree Visecchio, who was our assistant at the time we instituted this. We have found it to be extremely, extremely useful. So yet again, if someone is presenting, you and anyone on the task force will have the opportunity at the end of their testimony to say, and we do ask you to do it through the chairs, that you have a question for the record on something that has been presented. The norm in the Children's Committee has been to give the person 24 hours. We did that simply because if you have testified for this in a public hearing, we assume that you've gotten the information from a reputable source. However, in discussions with Representative Barham, because this is a task force and people are new to it, I think we talked about several days or whatever, but I would feel comfortable to be sure we had it by the next meeting, if you are okay with that, Representative Bannon. So we're going to give a little more leeway, simply because this is, you know, we're a task force. We're not the actual committee on children or the committee on general law. That being said, I'm certainly looking forward there. This is a complex subject. It is not an easy subject. It requires a great deal of knowledge, not only in chemistry, but in economics, in toxins. So we are looking forward to our informational hearings and inviting people in from both sides of the debate so that we can make a decision about the level of cadmium that is appropriate in little children's jewelry. That being said, I feel I need to address an issue that rose and regarding appointments to this task force. When appointments were commencing, there were people, and David and I were on the floor of the House when this happened, that were, let me say, concerned that legislators who are appointed to this, meaning our ranking members, our chairs, were to serve or to name a designee. When we put a legislator on a task force, my understanding is that I would like another legislator to serve if that legislator can't. After all, we are the policymakers of the state of Connecticut. And it did come up. And when it came up, it was because of...
Thank you. Point of order. Through you, Mr. Chairman, could the representative point to the part of the bill that says when the language came up? This would be a data question.
Senator, this was a verbal agreement on the floor where I agreed that Senator Bartolomeo, who could not serve because of being busy, would be her designee would be a legislator. And so we verbally agreed that designees for legislators would be legislators. So I understand where you're coming from, but we do, in this building, very often operate on a handshake. And if we can't operate on a handshake, I could have pulled the bill, because the bill had already passed in the House. And actually, Representative Barham offered. And I said, no, we can trust each other. I have no problem with that. I will, and we did appoint Representative Vargas, who is a member of the Children's Committee. So I took him at his word, and he took me at my word. And I would thank you, as the chair of this committee, task force, to allow me to finish, and then I would be happy to entertain any issues that you would like to bring up. So
I think that's a good idea, and why don't we allow our co-chair to make her statement, and I also would like to embellish on that for a moment. But
thank you. And I am not trying to be argumentative. I promised my co-chair that I would not be argumentative, but when something occurs and there is a agreement, I am a big believer in open government and in accountability. So Senator Bartolomeo, and she is a tremendous chair of children's, but she is overworked. We have many task forces on the Children's Committee, and she wanted a designee. And that's what we agreed on the floor of the House. What has happened here is the ranking members of the Children's Committee, and I'm very happy to see Senator Linares here today because he is the ranking member, ended up appointing as their designees two industry-related people from Rhode Island. I welcome them to the task force, but I felt it needed to be cleared up that we had a gentleman's agreement. Allow me to make that a gentlewoman's agreement, that we would designate legislators for legislators. That being said, you can go to the website and see what the appointments were. We give appointments to the Speaker of the House, the Minority Leader of the House, the President of the Senate, and those are specific appointments, whether it's a child advocate, whether it's a jewelry industry representative, so that we're sure that the task force is balanced. But we look for our legislators as the policymakers, particularly in this instance, and I'm sure there are task forces where this hasn't happened, but we had made this commitment to each other, and I was the first one who had to talk to my senator and say, we've made this commitment. She said, that's no problem. We talked to Representative Vargas, and he was happy to serve. Yet again, I would like to say this is not meant to be contentious. This is meant to have government be open and accountable. And Representative Barham has been a prince on working with me to get this task force together and to move our along our way. And with that, I'm happy to entertain questions from anyone on the task force, the senator, as well as my co-chair, but I believe my co-chair has a few words to say.
If I may, when Representative Urban and myself were putting the task force together in terms of the theory on the floor of the House the last few days, when we were looking at actual language and finalizing things, in all honesty, we did have an understanding that we were going to have legislators appoint other legislators if they couldn't serve. I think we perhaps overlooked a couple of things, and it may be more to my inexperience, but the bill probably could have been clearer and more definitive, and I think we have learned a lesson from that. In the future, when you draft legislation, if you want appointments to be that specific, we probably should articulate it. Secondly, when we did learn that some appointments had been made, we did go back to those individuals, and we were told that they attempted to get other legislators, but being the summer, it was difficult to enlist people, and not everybody is terribly interested in maybe this topic versus another topic to spend the time that we're all committing. So the way I look at it is that while we had a little bump in the road in the sense of a misunderstanding, I still think we have a tremendous committee. We have a great deal of expertise on this committee. And in terms of the legislative process, we are gathering the information and the facts. We will hopefully, I'm somewhat optimistic, come to a consensus. But even if we don't, we will turn over our information to the legislature. It then has to work its way through the Children's Committee and the General Law Committee. And then after that, it is debated in the House and the Senate. And there will be, you know, ample opportunity for people to question assumptions, to question facts, to take all of these issues up. And for those of us who have served on task forces before, it's rare, at least in my experience, that a task force report is adopted in toto, where it's just taken as the final word. Normally, it goes to a transformation and it's changed here and there. But certainly, at the very least, it's debated and vetted, and the legislators will have to make up their own minds. So I like to look at, you know, where we are in a positive fashion. And from my perspective, even though we had some slightly different expectations, I still think we have a great task force and we can get our job done. And I think at the end of the day, we'll be very happy with at least the way we work together and the information that we've collated for other people to review. So,
on a happier note, Simon Lindsay, who is from Wheeler High School, is my, is it the word mentee when you have a, you're mentoring someone? Well, he is very interested in the process, and he's here with me today. And this is so his teacher actually knows that he's here and has spent the day with me, poor Simon, and will be with me during the summer and the beginning of the fall learning the legislative process. So, Simon, I know I'm embarrassing you, but welcome.
What I would like to do is just a few administrative things next. I would suggest to our colleagues the issue was put forward. If you have something to add and you would like to or question, fine, but my suggestion would be that we not belabor it. We had our expectations put on a table, and now we should move forward in a positive strain, but certainly two of my esteemed colleagues.
Thank you. I will take this opportunity because when we speak about accountability and open government, a handshake amongst colleagues of one party in the floor of the House of Representatives does not change state statute. And that is what has developed this meeting today is state statute that was signed by Governor Malloy. In it, it specifically states who shall serve on the task force. And also, I'll refer to Section 10, Section 2, Subsection 10, which says that the Senate ranking members, the Joint Standing Committees of the General Assembly, having cognizance of matters relating to children and general laws, or the ranking members' designees. Now, as Chairwoman Urban said, Senator Linares is the ranking member on children's. I am the ranking member on general law. So either we could serve ourselves or we could have a designee serve at our pleasure. Absent a specific limitation in the law, our authority to appoint a designee is unlimited. There is no boundary by state. When we appoint a designee, we do so to serve the best interests of the task force, to have questions answered to the best of the ability. I am not an expert in cadmium, but I, serving on general law, I wanted to learn something about it. That's why I came, and I will probably add not much to the debate except for soaking it in and learning. So if the bill comes before us next session, now I feel like I might have some input during a public hearing session, because all we're here to during this task force is to gather information and learn about the topics and as discussed previously. But there's been numerous committees through the legislature. And I did my homework when I found out about there was going to be some politicizing of appointments, which I had never heard of before. Generally, the appointments are accepted on the good faith of the legislator making that appointment. And it's sad that that we had to bring that up today, because the gentlemen that are here, while they may be from a neighboring state, they're well qualified to speak on this subject matter. So I just wanted to get that on the record, since those in the opposing viewpoint made their remarks. And I'm prepared to move forward without any further discussion on this topic. Thank you.
What I would like to do is just handle a couple of administrative duties. First, I was supposed to remind everybody to please read the signage that's on the table next to you. It tells you, especially for those of you who are joining us who are non-legislators, you have these red buttons next to the mic, and you push it, and the light lights up red if you want to speak. And then after you speak, you should push the button again and turn it off. We all make mistakes, so don't worry if you do. And also just to notice where the exit locations are in case we had to evacuate the chamber. I also would like to take a few minutes to sort of introduce our task force members, and if anybody would like to say anything about themselves as I introduce you, that would be fine. And I can't coordinate this where you're sitting, so I'm just going to go in order. I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to go in order of my sheet here. I will say there are a couple of appointments that have not been confirmed yet. Letters have gone out. People are on vacation. So we're hoping that for the next meeting, we will have a full complement. But nevertheless, we will go forward regardless of who's in attendance. So first, we have Ann Hewlett, who was appointed by Senator Don Williams from a nonprofit organization promoting children. And is Ann here? Ann, anything you'd like to say to introduce yourself?
No, I just want to thank all of the committee members for the opportunity to participate in this important group, and I look forward to working with all of you and learning from all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome. We also have an appointment from Representative Joseph Arsimowitz, the Majority Leader of the House, who was to appoint a chemist with expertise in bioavailability of heavy metals to serve as an ex officio member. And I understand that that appointment was made, and it's Dean Thomas Mitzel. He is the dean at Trinity University. I do not believe he is here today because he was just appointed, so hopefully he'll be here at our next meeting, but I'm enthusiastic because obviously he brings a great deal of experience with him. Next, we have Tim Phelan, who is president of the Connecticut Retailer Merchants Association, appointed by Senator John McKinney. And Tim, anything you'd like to say?
Thank you for the introduction. I look forward to working with members of the committee. This is an important issue for all retailers, precious metal dealers, jewelers in the state. So I look forward to serving on this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Obviously, Diana and myself. And next, we were just joined by Representative Edwin Vargas, who was appointed by Senator Bartolomeo, and Representative Lou Esposito, who was appointed by Senator Paul Doyle. And Lou is here, and Ed is here. Anything you guys would like to say?
Looking forward to seeing
you. Great. I know if you give Ed a little latitude, he'll talk, so we thank that. next, we have Anthony DeGeorge, who was appointed by Representative Whit Betts, and we have Representative Dan Carter, who is serving as the ranking member of General Law. First, is it, did we say Tony? Is that fine? Okay.
I just wanted to thank everybody for having me on the committee, and I look forward to serving, and I thank you.
And my close colleague, Dan, anything you'd like to say?
I'd give a thumbs up, but that wouldn't be on the record. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Next, we have Brent Cleveland, who was appointed by Senator Art Linares. And we also have Senator Kevin Witkos, who is the ranking member of General Law. First, Brent, anything you'd like to say?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm delighted to be here as a strong advocate of the Children's Safety Program. I was the chair of the ASTM Children's Jewelry Safety Standard, which gives me a unique perspective into this, this situation. But thank you.
Thank you. Senator, anything further?
I want to say I'm looking forward to hearing the discussion. You know, I always tell folks one of the things I like best about serving is that you learn something new every day, and I think we're going to get a breath of an education over this topic, so I look forward to hearing the discussion.
Next, the Department of Consumer Protection appointed Richard Maloney, who is the director of the Department of Trade Practices Division of DCP. And Richard, are you here?
That would be me, Chairman. Thank you very much for the appointment, and I look forward to serving on the committee. Thank you.
Do we call you Rich? Or?
Rick is fine.
Rick,
yes.
Rick, okay.
Thank you.
So just correct me if I get that wrong. Next, we have the Department of Public Health has appointed Gary Ginsburg, a toxicologist. And Gary, are you here?
Oh,
feel free to join us.
Join
You're, Angel, do we have a card for him?
We'll have a name tag. So.
Right. If we have this too imbalanced, we'll tip.
I just want to say I hope that whatever toxicology background and risk assessment background that I can provide will be informative for the committee to consider. I do have a lot of experience on children's metabolism, clearance of things, absorption. And I also recently published a paper on cadmium effects on the kidney, looking at population risks.
Well, thank you. We look forward to your participation. So, you know, hopefully the two vacancies that still exist will be filled, and we will have a full complement for our next meeting.
Sure. Representative Vargas just came in and asked me how Senator Maynard is, and because we're here today, I know that he will be turning on CTN at some point, and I just want to say that our prayers and our best wishes, and I'm sure I'm speaking for everyone here, go out to him and his family. And Andy, if you're turning on CTN, we can't wait to get you back. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Urban, for making that comment. We all appreciate it. Next, I'd like to take just a few moments to introduce a first-rate, dynamic staff, probably the best in the entire Capitol. And first, I'd like to start with my own committee, General Law. Angel Morales is acting as one of our clerks. He's the clerk to General Law. A phenomenal guy, and I want to particularly thank him and Liz, who I'll introduce in a moment, for organizing this. There's a lot that goes into just getting the meeting noticed and organizing the chairs and the placards and the materials and everything. So, Angel, we truly appreciate your help. Attorney Richard Hanratty, our LCO, who, again, is with General Law, just a brilliant guy, and we appreciate his participation. Duke Chen with the Office of Legislative Research, again with General Law, but a tremendous asset. And Al Shepard with the Office of Fiscal Analysis. I'm not sure I saw Al, but he's here to give help. And then I'm told we have an equally qualified dynamic group from Children's Committee, Liz Gianneros, who is going to be a co-clerk with Angel, and Liz sitting at the table, and we appreciate all her help. Jeremy Sawyer, the LCO, I'm not sure if he's on vacation, I think, today. Catherine Dwyer and Paul Frischman from OLR, and I'm not sure if they're both here. Okay. And Rachel Della Pietra from OFA. Rachel is here, right? No, she's not here, okay. And are there any other staff, Diana?
Yes, we have Alessandra Burgett, who is our special projects assistant, who has been helping us too. And I know that she wasn't on the list because we just got her.
And we also have other staff who have volunteered to provide backup, so we are well endowed with tremendous staff helping us. And I would just remind committee members that if there's information that you need, you can always call one of our clerks if you need some information that was passed out or you missed a meeting. We certainly encourage you to contact the clerk. And so with that, one of the key things that we need are names, telephone numbers, emails, so that the clerk can get notices to you, answer questions, get information. So Angel was going to pass around a sign-up sheet so that you could each, and I just asked you to print carefully your full name, your email address that you want us to use. If you have a work address that you don't want used and you want a private home address, I just want to remind those non-legislators that under Freedom of Information, if you give a personal address, technically if somebody requested information, you could be opening up access to your private computer. So many people do use their own home email addresses, but, in the unusual circumstance where somebody does ask for information, it is possible that you are opening up that door to invasion of your private materials. So as that goes around, we appreciate your participation. Next, I would like to just remind everybody of upcoming meetings and how we intend to conduct those. First, Representative Urban and myself have decided that we would alternate the running of the meeting. So I started with this meeting, and the next one, Diana will be leading it. If one of us is absent for some reason, we certainly will make arrangements. But we're looking at our next meeting for Thursday, July 31st, again at 2 p.m., same room, 2D. And this meeting is to allow for presentation of invited guests. And our goal is to invite people with different perspectives on both sides of the issue, who have some expertise, who can share with us. It's not really intended to be a public hearing where we have people come and just say I'm opposed or I'm in favor of this or that. It's really to elicit information, people that we think will be valuable for us. So Diana and I are going to go through a list of names, but if you have individuals that you would like to be considered, I would suggest you get them to one of our clerks in the next day or two, because there's not much time between now and the next meeting, although we have also discussed that at the August 7th meeting, which we have labeled meeting and discussion, that would be another meeting where we could have other guests come who couldn't make it because of the short notice. So we're trying to be flexible that way. But again, I would just ask, because our goal is to make these meetings, you know, concise, to the point, get the information, and what we don't really want are people coming, you know, to just express an opinion that may be political or emotional, but we're looking for information. We have the luxury of having had these bills viewed by both children and general law committees, where we did have public hearings, so we made available to members of the public to come and address us. So again, we're focusing on information. So if you have somebody, please share that with us. We will start at 2 o'clock, and we're hoping, you know, that the meetings will be reasonable in length, and again, to give the presenters ample time to make their presentation and get questions. And obviously all of this is public testimony, so if you miss a meeting, you'll be able to see, you know, online the minutes, the agenda, the testimony, and so on. If you can't make a meeting, again, don't lose sleep over it. We certainly encourage everybody to come, but you can follow us online and catch up. And again, any information that you want, just contact our clerks if you haven't gotten it. And any questions on the meetings? It's not our expectation that we will finish our job after August 7th. We have talked, and we think we may need another couple of meetings, one perhaps to just discuss among ourselves and allow our own experts who are members of our committee to present their points of view. And then we anticipate in some format to be able to say to staff, these seem to be informational points, and try and get a draft of something that comes before us that we can discuss and see if we can reach any consensus on those factual points. Next, I'd like to go to the... Yes?
Just one question about... You had mentioned the invited guests. I guess, how are we going to start with who gets the invited... Who are the invited guests? Did I understand correctly that you said you and Representative Urban will put together a list of who would be the first invited guests? And would you then share that list with us as well as other... just want to get a better handle on how that process will work.
I think that we will meet and discuss guests that we have identified that we think would be of value, and we are encouraging every member of the committee to submit any individuals to us in the next day or two so we can review them and get a notice out. So this is a collaborative thing, but obviously, you know, we may have to make some decisions because of time constraints and trying to avoid some duplication. But yes, if you have people that you think would benefit the committee, please submit it. And again, we will have a second opportunity on August 7th. So if you think of somebody afterwards, or somebody you've recommended can't make the first one, we're going to try and accommodate them for the second one.
follow-up to that, Mr. Chairman. Then I presume during those presentations we'll all have opportunities for questions and dialogue back and forth.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
If I could add, we're going to try to have it balanced. So because that, you know, that's one of the issues with a public hearing. It depends upon who can show up that day. And so we already have that information out on the public hearing. So we're going to actually pretty much stipulate that we have balance in the presentations. And I would also, if there's a particular expert that cannot get here, written testimony, I believe, we will discuss whether that's appropriate, but I'm thinking that there are people that are from different areas that might not be able to fly in for a specific day. So I think my co-chair and I will discuss that, and certainly any input that people have from the committee on whether we would like to see anything in written form. We already have a lot of testimony from the two public hearings, but if there are particular experts that have difficulty getting here to, you know, Hartford, maybe we want to accept written material. And I'm sort of throwing this out there because David and I had not discussed it. So, you know, this is, I'm anticipating that you will ask that question. So, you know, it's sort of the advance. Okay, so I think we'll be looking at that.
Yes, the representative.
Just a question on the presentation by the invited guests. Will there be time limits on their presentations? I know during the regular hearings they have a time certain. I think we should have the time certain set. They're not 20 minutes for one and 10 for the other. But they should all be constricted to one time. And as far as the written testimony by guests that can't appear here, I would have some concern, as was mentioned earlier, that they'll have to have provable facts. And we will have no way to answer or ask questions of written testimony. And if we did have questions, how do we correspond? Do we email them, fax them, and question them? When do the answers come back to us?
Lou, I could, and when we did the children's questions for the record, we have on occasion, because the person came in front of us and then left. So we have pursued it via email to say we need this, and the person that was not able to give it to us in 24 hours, so we have pursued them. But, you know, again, I think that's a point well taken, and it's certainly something that we should agree upon. It's simply because the Children's Committee has the experience. We've done it. And so we have run into these things, but it's a point very well taken.
Those are excellent points, and we have discussed some kind of a time limit on the speakers, but we think it should be something more than 3 minutes, because many of these people are experts in their field, and some of them may be traveling very long distances. So we will try and come up with a reasonable period of time. And then for those of you who are non-legislators, when somebody makes a presentation, there are opportunities for questions. So in effect, even if they had 5 minutes, it can expand to whatever you want it to based on the number of questions. Again, we just ask everybody to listen to the questions being asked, so you don't repeat or duplicate and extend the thing on, you know, unnecessarily. But yes, there will be ample time to talk to these people, and if somebody, my goal is to get everybody here in person so that we can talk to them face to face. But with the exception, if it happens, we will certainly make an opportunity available to email them and answer questions.
And just to explain my concern about the time limits, I don't know how many people you anticipate inviting, but if there's 10 or 15 or 20, and if we start going into the 30-minute periods, we're looking for hours upon hours. So I want to make sure that there's not.
I think our goal is to limit the number of invitees, and that's why we're going to try and balance it and avoid duplication. Okay, the next item, 5, is...
On that note, I'm not sure how to get attention to the question.
That's fine.
But please, if I don't have the procedure down, just correct me. But regarding
a budget to bring people in? Is there any budget? Because if there's no budget for this kind of thing, then we may not get the kind of balance you're looking for in terms of who's got support from organizational support to do this kind of travel. I'm thinking about people in academia who would not be, who may be expert but wouldn't be able to be here. So if that isn't available, you know, travel funds aren't available, would there be a way for them to do some kind of a webcast to this group?
I'm butting in. I'm for coaching. What a great question. And it's certainly something that, you know, I thought about, because there are organizations that can afford to send people, and then there are people in academia. So I really appreciate that question, and I think maybe that's something that my co-chair and I have got to discuss and, you know, figure out. But I think it's, you're absolutely right, because you could, because organizations have money, could send someone, whereas if you're asking a prof from, say, Duke to come up and they've got to fund themselves, then we're not going to see them. So, you know, I'll give this back to my co-chair.
Thank you. We will discuss that. I am not aware that we have a budget allocated for transportation, so we'll discuss it and we'll report back to the committee and see if we can come up with a solution. The next item, 5, are rules and procedures, and the chairs have discussed this, and we're recommending that we adopt the joint rules of the Senate and the House as the committees, and the use of Mason's manual to answer any questions. And those joint rules, one important part is that you have to start your committee meeting within 15 minutes of the anointed time. So if our meetings are at 2, we have to start at 2:15, otherwise the meeting is canceled. So the onus will be on the chairs to make sure that we're here on time, one of us, to start the meetings. And whatever you can do to be here on time would certainly be appreciated. We went an extra 5 or so minutes today because we knew people are not all familiar with the LLB, and we wanted to give time for people to come and find us. So that is our recommendation. There are a couple of nuances to that we're also setting forth for the committee, and that is that ex officio members will be non-voting members. That's usually the case, but we just want to make that clear that when the statute was created and we put ex officio, that was the intent, that any ex officio members are non-voting. And the other nuance is that we agreed that there would be no quorum requirements for normal meetings, but at any meeting where we're actually voting on a set of recommendations, we would require a quorum, which is a simple majority of the entire committee. I think there's 16 of us, so we would need 9 people, assuming everybody's appointed. And hopefully those rules are acceptable to everybody. In terms of the next item, discussion of goals and objectives, I think that the chairs have probably indicated, you know, what our goals are, and I won't take extra time to repeat that, but I would just say I am excited about working together to make sure that we do what's best for our state and for all parties concerned, and I have no doubt that we will, you know, be hearing very valuable information that will, again, give us the information and background with which to make those kinds of decisions. And again, to put it in perspective, whatever we decide, whether you are happy or unhappy, that is not the conclusion of this process. It's only the first step of the process. It still has to go before committees and be debated by the full legislature. So, again, in my experience, things can change drastically as you work your way through the process, but our goal is to do the best we can as the parties that are getting the access to this valuable information. And I'd ask my co-chair if she would like to elaborate.
I agree.
The next item, 7, is materials and information. And our clerks will be emailing to each of you links to the Children's Committee and the General Law Committee for the hearings that we had on cadmium on children's jewelry. And when you go to those links, you will see reports, you'll see position statements by people who spoke. Some of those reports are very valuable on both sides of the issue, and I would encourage you to read them, print them off if that's how you prefer to do it. We're trying to save paper a little bit because of some of them are very voluminous in nature. So what we decided is we would just send you the links, and you can determine whether or not you need to print it or just read it on the computer. As new information comes in, we will certainly share that with everybody. What I would ask you not to do is to just, if you find something, I don't want you to circulate it to the group without going through the chairs. We should know what it is that you're proposing to circulate, and we don't want to undermine the process we're setting up by having people address the committee and give us information, and then somebody on either side of the issue comes up with something that's different, and they just, it's something that should go through the chairs. Not that we're trying to prevent information, but this could get very chaotic if people are just emailing and circulating whatever they want. So we will send those two links to you. And again, I think it's really important that you read some of that information. Finally, I should have stated this at the beginning of the meeting. When we're addressing one another, it's very important to me that we treat each other with respect, even when we disagree with one another. On the positive side, we are all giving of our time. Regardless of what your inclination is on the issue, we want the best. We want the best for our state economically. We want the best for our children. And sometimes you come at it from different directions, but it shouldn't interfere with our personal relationships. And in the legislature, when we are addressing each other, we go through the chairs. And that creates a platform, if you will, to prevent attacking one another or engaging each other in debate. It's through the chairs. So, we will continue that process. And again, when we have a guest who's presenting, whether you agree or disagree with that person, be respectful because they're giving of their time and they're here and they're sharing valuable information with us. So other than that, I would ask if there's any other business to come before the committee. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's important as this group goes about its work that it clearly defines the task at hand, that we are looking at the existing cadmium restriction that has been enacted as Connecticut law, enacting 2 years from now, that we're going to keep the subjects of our speakers and the subject of our data specifically focused on that bill in that circumstance. We're looking at the effects of low levels of cadmium as they relate to exposure to children in jewelry, not just the world of cadmium that exists out there.
I personally agree with you. In more of a layman's terms, if we synthesize the issue down, to me, in the end, it is what is the proper threshold. For those of you who have done a little bit of reading, we have the existing Connecticut statute with the 75 parts per million, of which Diana Urban was very instrumental and has been involved in this issue for many, many years. And then we have the Jewelry Association's Safety Committee and others that are proposing, I believe it's the 300 parts per million. And then we will be getting information on what other states have been doing. In the end, after we hear everything, and I don't know if Representative Urban agrees with me, that's sort of the concluding or defining conclusion that we need to come to. What is the right level? There may be some other concerns or recommendations that also come forward, but I view that as the main objective of the committee.
I appreciate where you're coming from, but I also appreciate that there are states that have gone lower than we have at 40 parts per million, and the Washington Department of Ecology was instrumental in keeping that 40 parts per million. Maryland, I think people think that Maryland followed me. Maryland did not follow me. It was the National Caucus of Environmental Legislators. There are other states. So there's not a clear consensus on what level of cadmium we want our children exposed to. It's a shame that the federal government has not stepped up and done a standard. Instead of saying we will give a voluntary standard, which then the ASTM came up with a standard. So there is no consensus out there. And I think it's germane that there is no consensus. And I wish that the federal government would step up, but clearly they don't feel compelled to step up to make some kind of determination about children's jewelry. They apparently will step up in other areas where cadmium exists. So I believe it is our task to figure out what level is going to allow us to protect children as well as still see that small businesses can be viable. But, you know, sometimes those can conflict with each other. We have, as the Children's Committee, in our minds, and I know in my co-chair's mind, we're talking about long-term health. We have children's, the cost of health care, and whether there are impacts on that. That's why we have Department of Public Health here. So this is a very complex question. It's not an easy question. And it's being put on the backs of the states, which, you know, from my perspective, is a failure by the federal government. But you know what? If the federal government can't do it, we'll do it. So, you know, with that being said, I agree. This is what we're looking for. What is the threshold that we can feel is safe for our children in Connecticut? So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Again, looking at, I think, what we could view as consensus now, I think we would all agree that high levels of cadmium presents a health danger, particularly to small children. And we also know that cadmium is a metal that is a chemical that's also used in children's jewelry. And we also know that we have a number of manufacturers in the state of Connecticut and throughout the country who produce children's jewelry, and if we go to our major retail outlets, we see that it is a viable retail product in Connecticut and throughout the nation. And so it's how do we balance all of this and provide the safety that is necessary? And to me, that is the million-dollar question that we have to arrive at. And I think we all can probably agree on those points of view. And now the tough one is, you know, we have to study it and figure out, you know, what is the right number based upon the information we're receiving. Well, with that, yes.
Yeah. On this point, again, DPH wasn't at the hearings last year. But I thought another issue was not just the numerical target, but also whether to follow the ASTM standard, which I believe at least one version of the bill said that had language in there about following the ASTM methodology and standard for deciding whether a piece of jewelry is acceptable, and that involves extraction testing. And so something could have a very high concentration, but that if it passed the extraction testing, it could still be allowed into the marketplace. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that was also part of the bill last time and something that might be on the table at this point, because extraction testing gets into a whole another series of concerns and issues.
Yet again, Gary, thank you for that question. And that's what I was referring to, the complexity of the issue that we're looking at. I mean, you say extraction testing, and the people that are watching this are like, huh? So I don't believe that we are, yes, I do know that one of the bills said the ASTM standard, but I think that the task force is saying what is the best standard, and is that the standard that we want to use? Or do we want to use a lower standard? Do we want to use solubility or not solubility? Where do we want to go with this? How long can it stay in the system? Is it 24 hours? Does that mean that then we're fine? Or is it 3 days? And how does a child's system, you know, process if they swallow a cadmium piece of jewelry? So I think that, yet again, it's a complex issue, and we are very pleased that we have Department of Public Health here. Now, if my co-chair would like to speak to that.
Yeah, I would just say that I agree that I'm hoping we come up with the standard for Connecticut, and all the other standards that exist from these different organizations or agencies are certainly valuable for us to understand how they identified that and the information that went into it. But I think the goal, from my perspective, is to come up with our own standard. Any other business? Yes, we will. Angel and Liz, that is your first priority for next meeting, air conditioning or change the location. Once again, I want to thank everybody. I look forward to working with you. And with that, we will adjourn our first meeting.
The water. Thank you.